Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's also introduce myself and give a little commercial. My name's Tim Walbrecht, and I'm Director of Christian Education and Youth Ministry at Faith Lutheran Church in Redmond, Washington. And I've been in youth ministry 12 years, and I'm also on the staff at the Interpersonal Clinic as a family therapist. The Interpersonal Clinic is a part of Harborview Medical Center in downtown Seattle. Commercial over. What I hope to do this time, being we're given only about 50 minutes to an hour, and if I knew everything and was able to put it into 50 minutes to an hour, I'd write a nice book or go on a lecture series on this subject and make a lot of money. But what I hope to do at this time is maybe open up some discussion. We're going to talk about characteristics of what goes on with adolescents. Going to be talking about probably our experiences as adolescents. Going to offer some hope, share some joy. I'm going to affirm adolescents as adolescents. I'm going to affirm parents as parents and adults as adults. And hopefully through our discussion there might be some contacts that people will make. I find that if more people found out from other people what that they were going through the same difficulties or the same joys, the same ups and downs that they are experiencing in parenting their adolescents, if they can identify some other people, sort of form a little network support group, it makes it all a little more easier. So hopefully from this we can go out with a little contact with each other. Before we get into the whole thing, I think I'd like to quickly go around and find out who else is here and maybe state whether you're a parent of 1, 2, 3, or 4 or have been or will be, or if you want to go through adolescence all over again or wherever. And if you really want to go through adolescence all over again, I'll tell you when the nurse's hours are. You can go talk to her, because I really think something's the matter with you. Never mind. Let's start over here.
Okay, I'm Leroy Anderson from Kenmore in North Seattle. We've gone through 5 of adolescence and 1 more to go. So I've got to come and learn some.
If you've gone through 5, maybe you should be sitting here and sharing this point. Thank you. Next.
Dick Warren from Minneapolis. We have 4 teenagers.
What is
the age?
What are the ages of the others?
13, 14, 15. Well, 13 and 2, 15 is the day.
Right.
18.
Okay.
Wife up. In addition to being the mother of 2 teenage daughters, 13 and 15, I married 3 teenagers 5 years ago, so I'm also the wicked stepmother.
a lot of experience we have in the room. Go on.
I have 3 teenagers and 1 who has just exited and is now 20.
Okay.
1, 22, and 1 daughter, 17.
Good.
I have 1 son who's 17. I'm a single parent.
Okay.
My next?
Yes.
I have a 12-year-old. And? Oh, and a 4-year-old. Not worried about that yet.
I'm Barbara Raines from Woodinville, Washington, and I have a 13-year-old boy and a 20-year-old boy.
So you've had one go through and the other one's coming out.
But they're both different.
Oh, yeah, we'll be talking about that.
I'm Steve Ridzak from Snohomish, Washington, and I have a 6-year-old daughter. Getting prepared.
I'm Bill Raines, husband of and father of.
Okay. Let's go back. You, please.
Speak up. You're a conscience.
How old are you? 13. Very good.
I'm Wayne Cannell from Woodinville. I have 15 and 13. 2 more girls following.
Carter Fisher from Bellingham, and I have four daughters, two young ones who married at four grandchildren.
Okay.
I've got long reach. Adolescents.
Ah, yes.
I'm Joe Whitecamp from Spokane, and I have an 11-year-old boy and a 9-year-old girl who's already started it.
I'm Pam Wise from Big Harbor, and our daughter is 8, but I teach high school.
Daphne Schneider from Astoria, Oregon, and I have a 6.5-year-old son and a 10-year-old daughter who's sort of pre-adolescent.
Someone walked in over here.
Val Swenson, Ridgecrest, a boy 10 and a boy 6.
Getting prepared.
Elaine Swilley, I have a boy 11 and a boy 7.
So, within this room we have experience, and it sounds like we have people who are planning well enough ahead, and we have some that are going through it. So that should be interesting. I myself have not parented an adolescent. I am talking to my three kids. I'm trying to convince them to skip those years. I have offered them almost everything under the sun. So my viewing of this comes from a person who has worked with adolescents for 12 years and worked with families. So I'm sort of viewing this and giving my feedback on what I see. To start, I have one quote and one reading, which I think will sort of start us off. First is one of my favorite quotes, and I usually carry it around with me. It's from Mark Twain. Maybe some of you have heard this. But he writes, "When I was a boy of 14, my father was so ignorant, I could hardly stand to have the old man around. But when I got to be 21, I was astonished at how much he had learned in 7 years. And the other one I read in dedication to all those who have had kids go through adolescence or are in that process, I think you might identify with this reading. It's from the book, How to Live Almost Happily with a Teenager. It's in the bookstore. It's an excellent book. I highly recommend it. It's a dialogue, and it goes like this. "How was the party last night?" we asked our son. "Fine." "Who was there?" "People." "Like who?" "Kids." "Seniors? Juniors? Who?" "I didn't ask." "How many?" "Next time I'll take a census." "Was there food?" "Yeah." "What kind?" "Party food." "Like what?" "Cut it out. Am I supposed to take notes? I went to a party. Is this a third degree examination?" "What are you getting so angry for? All we are doing is asking a few questions. Is there anything wrong with our wanting to know where you were and what you did?" "You're darn right. There's a lot wrong. Can't you understand there are some parts of my life I want to keep for myself? Do you have to know everything? Next time I go to the bathroom, I'll write a report." Can you identify with that reading? Yes. Several people shaking their heads and the like. Okay, I want to start off by doing a little board work, and I'm going to ask for some words that come to your mind when you hear the word adolescent or adolescents. What comes to your mind when you hear that?
Pushing away.
Pushing away.
Leaving.
Leaving.
Out of control.
Right.
Independent yet dependent.
Out of control. Independent
yet dependent.
Freshness.
Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, dependent. What was that?
Freshness.
Freshness. Freshness.
Confusion.
I'm not going to ask on whose part.
Both, I guess.
I mean that in the positive sense, in the innocent, not innocent, but.
This one here?
Open, kind of.
I think it'd go the other way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
just put open down as being one thing to think about. There was, I heard another one.
Closed also.
Closed?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And closed. What else?
Disagreement.
Disagreement?
Disagreeable.
Smart out. Disagreeable. Again, I'm not going to ask on whose part. Any others?
Changing moods.
Changing moods.
Oh, really?
Physical changes.
Physical. Physical change.
Close to an adult.
Close? Is that?
Close to an adult.
Of course, we can spend hours talking about what is an adult. Close to an adult.
Anger.
Anger. Then I won't ask you this part.
Sadness.
Sadness. Any others?
Fear.
Fear. Again, whose part? But we won't get into that right now. We have a lot.
Well, how much time have you got?
I'm not going to spend 50 minutes doing this. Sorry, we have pushing away, leaving, out of control, independent yet dependent, freshness, open, closed, close to an adult, fear, confusion, disagreement, disagreeable, changing moods, physical change, anger, sadness. There's some good, and I didn't divide these up as I went. I just rolled over there because I didn't want to bend down any more further. But we have some good things, some that have negative connotations, and some that have positive connotations. Good, gets us started thinking. I want to take a trip. I'm going to have you take a trip also. I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. Going on a little trip back in time. So you will need to close your eyes, everyone, and take a nice deep breath. Should probably take another deep breath because we've had coffee. And begin to relax and let your mind wander back to the time of your adolescence. I want you to choose an age, maybe 13, maybe 16, maybe 18. Choose a location, your home, or your school, your church. Take another deep breath, blow it out. What does this feel like for you? What are the smells? What's going on around you? What's going on in the world? What are the issues in the world? Again, feel the emotions. Sense the smells. Who is around you? Who are you with? What is happening to you physically? How does this make you feel? What's happening to you physically? What's the good or what's the bad? Take another deep breath. What's happening to you socially? What's the good? What's the bad? How do you feel socially? Take another deep breath. What's happening to you mentally? What are the good? What are the bad things? How does this make you feel? Deep breath. What's happening to you emotionally? How does it make you feel? Identify the good or the bad. Final deep breath. What's happened to you religiously or spiritually? And how does this make you feel? Identify the good and the bad. Final deep breath and let yourself come back to the present. What I would like for you to do about the next 6 minutes, 3 minutes each side, is to pair up with somebody that you don't know or are not related to. And I want you to just discuss. One person takes about 3 minutes, and the other person just discuss what this little exercise was like for you, and discuss the five areas, and I'll put them back on the board, what you rediscovered or reaffirmed or discovered for the first time about yourself physically, socially, mentally, emotionally and spiritually, and then we're going to come back around and maybe do a little sharing on that, and then I'm going to talk about some of the characteristics, and those that have parented can also give a lot you know, towards what goes on characteristically with adolescents in these five areas. Okay, can you do that real quick now? Find somebody. You can turn the chair, move to a different section. Find somebody you don't know. Make sure, be sure to face that person like knee to knee, or you're gonna, a lot of the power is going to go right past. Do not use the time to discuss your adolescence yet. I mean, your adolescence, yes, but not the ones that you're parenting. Stick to yourself. Discuss the five areas. Okay, can we begin to gather back around, please? Sorry I had to cut you off. If it's really interesting, you can sit at lunch and finish discussing this. Gather around the circle a little, please. I would imagine that possibly some of you found, while the exercise itself may have been somewhat easy, some of the thoughts and feelings that started to come back to you may not have been. I also feel that probably some of you rediscovered some thoughts and feelings that maybe you had forgotten about at the time. There's a quote I need to read to you from John Rice, who's an educator. But where is one who does not wince at the memory of his or her childbirth? Oh, wait a minute, let me start again. But where is... For some reason that didn't sound right. But where is one who does not wince at the memory of his or her adolescence? Women say they cannot remember the pains of childbirth. Crafty nature blots them out lest there be no more. So also one does not remember one's second birth from childhood into youth. The second birth becomes in memory a dull pain. I think it's important that as you deal with, I have found it important that as I deal with adolescents, that I try to remember what it was for me to be an adolescent. That helps immensely. It breaks down a lot of the barriers. Would anybody like to share what they discovered about themselves, just briefly? What was it for you as an adolescent?
Well, I discovered where I was brought up in Austria, you weren't really at that time to be allowed to be so outspoken as teenagers are now. You know, you just didn't talk to your mom and dad as they talk now. So when I think back of it, I pictured myself at 17. I was a pretty sly kid because what I do, I find out what would annoy my mother, you know, and I do it not in a direct attack. I do it slyly. Mm-hmm. But I felt then that I had to get away from home.
The age of 17, sort of breaking away.
Yeah, I began to think, well, there's a life away from home, and I better just soon get to it, you know?
A life away from home. There's an interesting book out that I encourage youth to read. It's entitled, and I can't remember the author, and I apologize, but the title of it is There Life After High School?
That is
good. Mm-hmm. It's a good book. You had your hand up.
Oh, yeah. I was 13 in my memory, and I know it's true intellectually, but I guess I kind of felt it, and feeling so misunderstood, you know? Like, they just didn't get it, what I needed and what I wanted, and in my first memory, my father was yelling at me to get off the telephone, you know? Been on the phone for 2 hours, get off the phone. And he didn't understand how I needed what I was doing, and I was always feeling misunderstood.
Mm-hmm. I have a real wild telephone number, too, I was sharing. My father could not accept the fact that I had a crush on a Catholic boy. We were Missouri Synod Lutheran. That just was not allowed. And he pulled the phone right out of the wall. I was talking to this Catholic boy in seventh grade, and I thought to myself, that's kind of good grief. I'm only in seventh grade. And I think if you believe in the Lord, it's wonderful no matter what church you go to. And I remember at that time thinking to myself, this is irrational.
Would you say that your father had this thing about phone calls to people of other faith, ripping the phone out of the wall. That's interesting. You know.
That was a real threat to him. That I was talking to a Catholic boy. I was supposed to be down in the basement helping my mother with the laundry.
No.
Today you thank God if they pick somebody that's in church.
Back there.
I was thinking that I was relating to my 16-17-year-old period also, which was in England, and which was the Second World War had started, and I was in the, I joined the Air Force as a boy at 16, and there was a training period of 3 years. I went into a thing called an apprenticeship, and of course I was with a group of 400, they took these groups of 400 boys in, and we went through this 3 year period, which was all very closely programmed. And we had a wonderful time. There was a lot of discipline, it was heavy discipline sometimes. And we had emotional problems, but we didn't treat them as problems. They were just things that happened, and the guys helped each other. They felt that somebody needed help, and they just naturally responded to it. They weren't told to do it. Somebody got into trouble with the sergeant or something and had to go out and stand and pray with all this stuff, and everybody helped him get ready and get him out the door and bring him back and get him laid out for the next one and so on. So I think that although there was, I really can't relate to the problems that people of that age have now, because they seem to be self-generated. They seem to be looking for problems. We had to face all this day-to-day discipline, and we didn't really rebel against it. If you did, you got crushed, but you got up again. Mm-hmm. No.
And it sounds like you found your support in your other kids around yourself.
Well, kids are doing that now too. The group is very important, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Whatever group they're in.
Yes.
I really think we as teenagers had it much easier than teenagers do today. Life was much more structured, and in many ways we did. Mm-hmm. Life today is so complex. There's so many choices that all the kids have. And I don't know if that's all good.
Mm-hmm. Anybody want to rebuttal?
I think the reverse is true in some respects too. I think our teenagers have so many opportunities and advantages and experiences. Travel, number one, when I think of the places my 13 and 14-year-olds had been already, all over the United States. So I think there are many more opportunities.
There are.
Educational, spiritual as well.
Our conscience is moving across the water.
Yeah. Well, there is one.
Okay. Anybody else?
I think there's an advantage to teenagers today. I think parents, or I am more knowledgeable about parenting than my father was. I don't, and my son has a great deal more freedom to say what he feels and do what he wants than I did. I felt real crushed and boxed in. And I think, although it's scary and kids take it over too much sometimes, they still, in a way, it's easier. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think parents are a little more sensitive to children now than they used to be.
I think parents know more now how their teenagers really feel than they did say when I was brought up, because you covered it, because you could never really speak out exactly how you felt. You know, I mean, if
I don't think that's true for everybody. No, I did not grow up that way at all. No. I grew up in a very open home. Yeah. I was always allowed to speak.
No, well, see, maybe that's the difference between the European upbringing and the, or it's just different people.
I think.
Yeah.
If you go into any bookstore, you'll find rows and rows on parenting books. Parenting is a big subject of the 70s and 80s. You know, it's in, there's articles on, in almost any of the magazines, almost monthly it seems like, how to be a better parent this, how to do that, or that. Mm-hmm. For all ages, from the kid is born till they're age two, to how to be a good parent when your kids are married, and you're, you know, grandparent aspect moving in and stuff. So there's a lot out there on that. It's a big subject. Anybody else? I want to move on then and talk a little bit on the five areas. And I don't know if we're going to have be able to finish. And what I don't finish, I'm going to pick up tomorrow, in tomorrow's session, finish that, and then relate it to what I feel the church should be doing in working with adolescents and with the family and with all types of families, because the times are changing. No longer is a family necessarily a husband-wife with 2.3 children, dog, cat, but more and more parishes are now becoming the haven where people can find support as a single parent, as a single, as a blended family. Divorces are going on within the parish, and I think that changes the focus of what ministry should be to the adolescent and to the home. And that's what I'll be talking about tomorrow. And if we don't finish these five aspects today, I'll finish those up a little bit tomorrow. Physically, what happens physically with adolescents?
Everything.
Yes, it is. It is definitely the onset of puberty. They are changing from childhood to adulthood. And that's the bridge to do that is through puberty, through adolescence. They are moving from the yo-yos or the baseball cards to cars. There's a new awareness of the body. They've taken surveys and have come up that a girl, a junior high girl, will spend approximately 7 hours a day priming herself. That is a fact. Think back, all you. There's a rival that develops. If you notice, because of the physical changes, the senior high boys start chasing the junior high girls. Okay. No, you know, junior high boys lag behind a year and a half to 2 years in physical change and development. And suddenly the junior high girls, just being with a junior high guy is not worth it. Who wants to be with somebody who's popping bubbles and looking at baseball cards still? And like when they could be riding in a car. This dramatic change happens in a very short time. The median age is approximately 13.5 years of age when this starts. It's lower. I'm glad someone here said that they have a child who's 12 and is like an adolescent. Adolescence, actually, I don't know if you can put an age bracket on it. I like to think of from year 11 or 12 on up to about 17 or 18. For the girls, development of breasts, complexion problems, figure, menstruation, including all the accidents that may be included with that. Boys, the voice changes, the hair changes, the size changes. They seem to grow 6 inches overnight. I had a fellow in my youth group who, from the last day of school a couple years ago, which was about June 15th, until the end of August, he grew 7 inches. He shot up from just below 6 feet to 6'7", and I'll tell you, he was the klutziest guy to walk through the door. Oh, hard. His parents were beside themselves. All this money they had spent for clothes at this size now. And he doesn't have any brothers to hand it down to. So, and what happens with that is they become very klutzy. They can't try to throw something to a junior high kid. They can't always catch it all the time. They can't walk all the time properly either. They're always stumbling. They're always tripping over this and that. But that's, their body is going ahead of them, say the least. There's also what becomes what I call wasting time. Parents come home and they go through, what have you been doing last night? Sitting here, how long, hour, blah, blah, and this whole bit. And a lot of parents have a hard time with what they think to be wasting time. Related to that is adolescents tend to sleep long, long time. They'll go to bed. You can put them to bed at 9 or 10, and if it's not a school night, and given free rein, they will sleep till 3 in the afternoon, okay? But there's a reason for this, and you should be aware of that. They aren't purposely wasting time, but they, because of the changes going on in them so much physically, emotionally, mentally, and the whole bit, their body tires out. Okay, they have to have more time to sleep. That was an adolescent slamming the door going to bed. The wasting time aspect, and we'll get into this later on too, I came aware of this thinking back to all the time I used to quote waste time. But a lot of times they will withdraw into themselves, and we will interpret that as wasting time. But what they are doing is they're sorting out in their own mind how to live. Okay? They're practicing within their own mind new ways of acting, new ways of doing this, new ways of doing that. And their self becomes their first testing ground. So they may be what we think is just sitting there doing nothing, daydreaming, when in fact they're testing out within themselves. Well, if I do this, is this girl going to like me? Is this guy, is this group going to reject me? I might, you know.
Do they consciously do that, or is it more just a kind of a daydream?
It's kind of a daydream. There's no agenda to it. But they will sit there and practice within themselves what life is about. It's a testing ground for them. Now, if they're sitting there for 8 hours at a time, then there might be some other little difficulty there. So that's part of the physical. And I'm not going to be able to go into great detail on any of these, and if you have anything to add, please do so, okay? But I have some suggestions with dealing with the physical aspect of an adolescent as a parent. First, try to convince them. Help them to understand that what's going on with them is basically good. Related to that is that their physical problems, their acne, their klutziness, whatever, that their physical problems are not spiritual problems. That's and it's for an adolescent. I've seen it with all the years dealing with confirmation age in senior high. They take it very personally. They think God has condemned them to a life of acne or whatever, and they take it very spiritually. I also like to remind parents, avoid embarrassing them needlessly. It's good, adolescents are good people to joke around with, but my mother still introduces me as her baby. I've gotten over the embarrassment about 3 years ago. But it is devastating, and I've been in the presence of parents introducing their kids to other adults, and maybe not as wild as, you know, this is my daughter, Miss Acne, or something on that wild, but they make a mention of something physical about the youth, and it's devastating. It is simply devastating because they're very conscious on how they look. Very, yes.
Stepping back one step, you're talking about assuring that what's going on with babies is good. I like that idea a lot. But one thing that I would say you shouldn't tell them is that this is the best time of their lives. A lot of kids will say, "Mom, I'm always telling me this is the best time of my life," and they know it's a lie. I mean, how could this be the best time of your life?
Yes.
Because if somebody denies what's going on, and somebody tells them this is the best.
Maybe we can, as adults, look back and say it was basically a good time, and that was the best time. Just wait till you be adult, you know, and stuff. You're right. Excellent point. Do not avoid saying this is the best time of your life. Wow, with what they're going through, and they're saying, Anyway, good point. Social aspect is that they're in the process of breaking ties with the family. And someone mentioned it before when we were putting up the long list. They are shifting from dependence to independence. And what's the main route that they do this by? And that's a lousy question, but by what process do they go from the independence to the dependence?
They use friends a lot.
The peer group, exactly. It's from dependence to independence via the peer group. And it's especially important for the junior high kid to be involved in a peer group. They are searching for their own identity. As they become senior high and as they move towards college age and really breaking away, now these are general statements, take your mind, more and more of them refine their friendships. Their peer group isn't a mass of 27 kids, necessarily. Okay, their friends become important. They're down to one, two, or three close friends. But in junior high, it's the masses. They like being with the big crowd, the in crowd, and they'll do basically anything to be involved. Jerome Kagan, in the book 12 to 16, Early Adolescence, talks about conformity, and he basically says that conformity to the peer group is essential to this process. And here's a quote from that book. The adolescent needs peers to help him or her sculpt his or her beliefs, verify his or her new conclusions, test his or her new attitudes against an alien set in order to evaluate their hardiness and obtain support for his or her new set of fragile assumptions. And that's the peer group. That's why they'll start dressing like their friends, they'll start acting like their friends, they'll try to be the comedian of the group, they'll try to be the athlete, the jocks hang around with the jockettes with the jockettes, and so forth. The cheerleaders all go to one side. In a youth group, open up your fellowship hall and all, let's say all your youth show up, well, you'll have these little pockets of peer groups. Yeah. The jocks, the jockettes, the cheerleaders, the nerds, the whatever going on. Okay? Also with the social, they are not ready to sacrifice their friends for their faith. They're not ready necessarily, not all the time, to sacrifice their friends for their family. Okay? But they're using their peer groups to gain independence. One suggestion. Offer guidance, but allow them to choose their own peer groups and commitments. And that's a toughie. It's usually the one with the biggest controversy. Choose their own peers. Let me read you a quote from a psychologist by the name of Ida LaShane. In fact, she's a family therapist of a number of years. She says, there are times when it is a necessary part of growing up to live through a particular relationship. Much growth in learning about oneself can take place even in some of the most ill-advised friendships. The only real protection against poor friendship choices is whatever help we can give our children in respecting themselves so much that they are unlikely to choose relationships that will hurt or demean them. Now that's easier said than done. I had an experience which affirmed this for me just this past spring. One of the families in the parish was talking with the father, and their daughter, she'll be a junior in high school, and she became friendly with one of the most popular guys in high school, okay? And I mean friendly was they spent time talking together, and I think they may have even dated once or twice. And she, let's see, she went over to his house or he came over to her house, whatever, but they talked for hours upon hours. And the father is relating this to me. And talked hours and hours, and we're getting along real well. And then later that night, they were talking about it and the relationship, and she said that she decided to break up with this guy. I mean, and this is one of the choice guys, according to all the girls, in the high school. This is a large high school, about 1,200. Athletic, smart, and the whole bit. And her reason for not wanting to get involved or any further with the guy, and she told her dad, was is he wasn't Christian. In their talking, she figured out that he was not Christian. So she put that emphasis on it. So she was able to choose. Any comments, feedback on the social aspect?
I have a lot of trouble with
good.
Relating. For example, just something simple like clothing. Mm-hmm. 1 year, or maybe it's not even going to last a year, it'll be Lee jeans, and the next 2 months it'll be some other kind, and they're responding to advertisements and all these kind of things. Our culture is what they're responding to, mm-hmm. and the peer groups are picking up very soon. Mm-hmm. But to try and live a responsible lifestyle as a parent and a family, I didn't have to deal with waste of that sort is difficult. And how do you say anything to the kids when they're, you know, it's kind of out of their control what they're responding to? How do you deal with those kind of...
Is it lunchtime yet? Anybody else want to start off on that? I know one thing in that came
my
to my mind.
Is
go ahead.
That you lean over backwards to let them have their genes or whatever it is, because it is so important to them at that time,
yeah.
that they'll get over it in a few years and they'll be done. You know, you'll never know the difference later.
What about the value of things, the learning how much money there is to spend? I think that's really an important lesson, and I think that you say, okay, you've got this much to spend on your clothes for this year, you can do it however you wish, but when it's gone, it's gone. And your mom has to do that. She can't go out and really have anything she wants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If they don't learn that at any age, it's going to be really tough.
And then what do you do when they go out and spend their money and money's all gone? Then what do you...
That's the lesson they're going to have to... One day or another, they're going to... That's right, there's babysitting, there's paper routes, there's... Well, I don't know exactly how... I'm saying that you have that in some individual set up.
Parenting adolescents is expensive, say the least. And I don't know if I have a set answer to that on what, you know, how can you get them to not buy as much, or, you know, to be suckered into what's on. I know, Walkmans are on their way out now. Okay, no one wants a Walkman per se. Those are taboo. Time Magazine gives them away now. If you buy a subscription to Time Magazine, you get a free Walkman. Okay, years ago you had to pay a cheaper rate, but now they're giving them away because they're no longer the in thing so much. Of course, tell that to all the parents who went out and bought Walkmans for all their kids, and their kids don't use them anymore. I don't know. Yeah.
One way I found was that if my daughter, she babysat and so forth, and if she wanted something. Sometimes she wanted something, she saw it, and she really had to have it. Was to suggest that maybe we go half, or I pay 2/3, and she pay 1/3. And boy, she really evaluated the situation quite often then, and didn't want it anymore, because it was money to put in that she had earned herself. They look at their own earned money a little bit different than yours.
I think as when they're junior high, and what I've seen is they, as soon as they start making money, they want to spend it like crazy. But I think as time goes on, once they have learned that, hey, this is what you're making, this is what it's worth, and as kids start making their choices, from what I've seen, and they've made their mistakes in their choices, I think they become a little more critical on what they purchase and how they buy. I've got kids that are socking money away because they know within 2 years they're going to college, and their parents have said, hey, times are slim, this is what it's going to be like, and they're putting money in the bank, spending a little here, but they don't spend as much. Those are the older kids. The junior high, that's a little more difficult.
I think it's important to start children on allowance early too, not be afraid when they just get into adolescence, so that they learn something about money. And also, I value very much something my mom taught me as an adolescent, and that is to shop sales. She taught me the value of shopping at sales, and spending getting the most value for your dollar at an early age, and I'm trying to show that to my own children.
A good place to buy faded jeans, which is always in Salvation Army. They're a lot cheaper than paying $35 for a pair of jeans that look like they've been through the washer 20,000 times. Anyway, that's a good point about allowances. My wife and I give an allowance to our 7-year-old and our 5-year-old. And we've started that, and they immediately take out a section to put in their offering for Sunday. And then they give the rest back to me because I'm usually short. Yes.
Part of his concern has to do with the morality of the children. It's wasteful to put these jeans you've never worn aside and buy a new one. And I don't know how, I'm not sure about the success of moralizing with kids. Maybe it just doesn't go, it is like Kohlberg or some people suggest, it's too soon to appeal to a sense of the justice in the world. It's not, moralizing, as much as you want to moralize and tell them, this is right because, I don't know how well it works.
I don't think it doesn't work at all.
Are you awake up there? Thank you. Okay. Do you have any comments on this? We have two more consciences sitting up there. No. Would you agree with all the parents concerned about how kids spend their money and jeans, clothing, how
they? Well, they get them in the Levi's, they're only
$14.95. Someone here who has learned how to shop the sales and the Best Buys. Okay.
I kind of agree with Sharon. I think that clothes. clothes are so important to teenagers. That's one place that I don't try to save a whole lot of money. I let my son have what he wants, but I put parameters and buy them in the fall. And pretty much he gets by, except for maybe a pair of jeans and a shirt later. So he knows that he has those clothes and that's it. But it really has, to me, it impinges on their self-concept so much that it's really important.
Clothing is, I agree, very important to adolescents. It's also very, very important to a lot of adults. Let's face it, we still play that game on how good we look and stuff. Maybe not up here so much, but or on vacation, but
and hair.
And hair, that's right. The whole physical aspect and how a person looks, that's where it's kind of where it's coming into. Anything else? We only have a couple more minutes, I think, before the bell rings. I'm going to stop here before I move into the mental and emotional and spiritual. I'm going to pick those up tomorrow very briefly and then move into what I think the church should be thinking about or should be doing now, presently in the 80s and in anticipation of the 90s and the like, and maybe get some feedback from people on, as parents, what would you like the church to be doing for the adolescents or for you as a family or for you as individuals or whatever, and we'll pick it up from there.
Could you just comment briefly on the adolescent who doesn't seem to want or need a peer group, who hasn't had the best friend, who mm-hmm. doesn't want to be a part of the game, who is very much introspective, alone, and really prefers adult company?
A lot of that happens, especially with the single child. Okay, now if it's with, but if you're in a family of four and five, I would, one thing that comes, as you were mentioning that, was I would be concerned with why that child is. Or that young adult, youth, I would be looking for signs of depression, and I would also look into physical. There might be something inside that isn't physically going. Not that I expect all kids to go out and find groups. It's just that if that person's withdrawing so much, there's probably something else besides the fear of peer groups that has them doing that. That would be my concern. I don't know, has anybody experienced that where, hey, it was all right in the long run back there again?
I just have a question. Is it not true that some teenagers just don't always have that need for large groups and they are more
That's true.
Than just
yeah.
have one or two?
Three? That's why I would say look at the physical aspect and do they seem to be depressed? Yeah. And if not, and they're fine, I was one that did not need a large peer group. I did not need that. When I was a child, I could spend hours playing by myself. My mother thought that was so great, just send him in the corner and whatnot. But I had it easy. But it would be easy for me to break into a peer groups if I so needed. I was athletic, I was witty, I was dumb, I looked good, you know, the stuff. But that was for me. But you're right, not all kids need the peer group. So I would say some dialogue, some observation on what's going on needs to be taken care of. Also, I think you should also look at yourself as an adult in most situations and say, especially let's use this as a situation where an adult really is pushing the kid to get involved with the peer groups. I think the adult needs to say, why, what is my need that I have to have my child involved with this? Okay. Got to be careful on that. What is the need that my kid has? I want my kid to be successful in school. I want him to be president of the class, president of student body, best athlete, best, blah, 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 you know, this whole bit. Got to ask yourself why.
I have two very opposites. My older one doesn't seem to need a lot of friends, and the younger one is very social.
When your older one was younger?
No, I don't think he was ever quite as social. It was never quite as easy for me to just break right into it. Mm-hmm. Maybe he never will be.
But you raise a good point. You have two, right? One. How old's the oldest again?
11.
11, and the youngest?
7.
Okay. You raise the point that two kids completely opposite, and I think most parents should be aware of that. Of course, three kids aren't going to be the same at all.
Well, it has a lot to do with the difference in ages. If you have your kids close together, of course, one child may want to copy the older brother. I mean, I've had friends like that, and you always were pushing them away to get away, but that's what he wanted to aspire to. What my brother's doing, I want to be just like my brother. And I've seen him carry it all the way through to adulthood. Mm-hmm. We have one 13 and one 20. And the 13-year-old doesn't seem to have a problem wanting to be like the 20, although sometimes it's reversed. The 20 may think he should shape the 13-year-old's life. But, there's such a difference in age that we really don't come into a conflict. Mm-hmm. And this bit about depression, I don't know. I think you get a lot of arguments on the composition of a child and whether or not they really have to have it. We had the same thing with the ages. Our oldest son, we think, turned out well, and he could care less whether he was in with the gang. In fact, we're thankful because a lot of times with the problems we have nowadays, the drugs and things, if your child wants to be in with a group, he's got to do this or she's got to do that. And if they miss that, you say, what a relief. Then you worry about the next one coming up. But there is two completely different personalities.
Oh, yeah. And a lot of times they'll start off and they'll test some of the peer groups and then they'll just say, hey, I don't need this.
Oh, yeah.
And they'll end up fine. Oh, yeah. Anything else before we close? I've got about a minute here until the bell. See you tomorrow. Let you out early so you get first in line. Yeah. You can all run and go prim yourself.